listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting show of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. Wayne will be with us in a few minutes. So, but as y'all can see, we have a special guest with us today. We have Anthony. Hello, Anthony. Here he is.
Hello, everyone. And glad to be here.
Go ahead and give a little brief introduction of yourself, because I would not do it justice. So go ahead.
I find it easier when other people do it, only because it's very varied. I am like a 25-year video producer. I've worked on local Emmy-nominated broadcasts. I do corporate live streaming, video production, and things like that. I've got a home studio. This, what you see behind me, is I have a Tech Thoughts channel, and this is my background of various gear, everything from, I always get that wrong, rotary phone to, VHS tape cases and things like that up here. And let's see, I'm a father of two. I've been married for almost 25 years as well. And let's see, what else? I don't even know where to go at that point.
I think that's good. You and I share the same hobby. I guess we'll call it a hobby. And my background is certainly less than technical, coming from the mental health space and then the federal prison space and beyond. So, and then somehow it was always a hobby and interest that started for me. And I'll go ahead and lead a little bit here. And mine is a little bit less, seemingly a little bit less sexy. But in the 70s, I had the Radio Shack 100 milliwatt walkie-talkie. And you could hit like two or three channels in this thing. And man, it was like a center-loaded telescoping thing. Remember those things? And you may be too young. I don't know. But anyway, I had this, and I could hear other people. I heard other people from other states. And I was just absolutely, absolutely enthralled. I can't tell you why that is, but it was. And I could talk and then I wanted more. So I had to work my way up from there. And I worshiped the Radio Shack catalog. The Radio Shack catalog came out. It had good, better, best. And you had all these wonderful CBs. Of course, my parents were very old school and made me save my money. So the next step, as you can imagine, was a 6-channel crystal mobile rig.
Oh, man, crystals.
Yeah, and it was a CB, obviously 11 meters, and I could talk to people because now I had 5 watts, and then I got a license, KKL2649, so I was a papered up CB operator by this time, and so then I had a back of the radio mount. Then I actually saved enough to get a gutter clamp, clamped it on the second floor. There's Wayne. Hey, Wayne, how's it going, man?
Good. I had trouble getting on. I couldn't get on.
That's okay. This is the show you've been waiting for, Wayne.
It sure is. I've been excited to hear this guy. I've
been excited to hear about this. Yeah, Wayne is definitely an observer of my ham radio stories. So anyway, long story short, went from that to CB, from CB to sideband, and then from sideband to tricked out single sideband. And then we moved to a house where I could get a high gain 5/8 wave penetrator. And then and I had a Hallicrafters rig and some other stuff, but I used the high gain penetrator. And then I got a Varmint amplifier, and then I started doing stuff with CB amplifiers.
I was wondering when the amplifiers are going to kick in.
Yeah, baby. I feel that way today. You know, I even in my ham career, I started Awesome. I went away. Okay, I'm back. So even in my, once I got my technician license, but even recently, the, you know, I've been screaming and yelling, and I've been QRP and barefoot rigs and always the bottom of a pileup, and nobody could ever hear me. And so I've kind of fixed that problem. But anyhow, or at least in theory. So since the 70s, worked my way up, finally got my technician license in 1992, a no-code technician, obviously. And then kind of went to sleep from there with the hobby, with raising kids, working a career. I retired from the Justice Department in 2013, reassembled yet again another career, and then only until recently did I get my general class license. So, and now I have this, you know, FTDX10, the monitor, the 1500 watt amplifier, two antennas, the automatic tuner and all that other stuff. So it's kind of point and click now, but it boy, was a labor of love. A lot of, I've gone through a lot of different rigs and buying and selling. We were in Hamfest together a couple of weeks ago, folks. For those of you who follow me on Facebook, Anthony was at the Hamfest, and I had actually a table that I was selling my crap. You weren't selling anything, were you?
No, I was just stopping off there, checking things out,
handing out flyers for the club.
There was something that I was like, I almost threw money down on, but I didn't. And since then, I'm like, yeah, I should have got that. You know, I was like, I have, I'm also, well, okay, my turn, a little background. It was back in the last millennium when everyone was scared about 1999 and how everything was going to go corrupt because none of the computers understood the date.
Y2K. Yes. Yes.
And everything was going to go to hell in a handbasket. And I was like, my dad and I, when I was really young, he got a Heathkit receiver, and we would tune in and do shortwave listening. And I was like, you know, probably be good to have that ham radio license just in case. So I studied up, got my ham license, and later he got his. And my first radio was the ICOM 706. You could always say the venerable 706 because there was a series of them. It is a great starter radio. It's a great radio. But it's compact little thing, super easy. It's bulletproof. You know, it'll just take a beating with whatever you want to try to do to it. And like you, it's interesting when you get a radio and you start experimenting, because these are open. It's one thing that people might not understand about ham radio is that the license not only gives you access to certain bands, but it also gives you license to experiment. And these radios are not, as we say, channelized. So if you do CB, you get 19 channels. If you do Mars or FRS or GMRS, they're channels. These are your channels. You can pick between these channels. And on a GMRS radio, you're using FM, you know, whether it be wide FM or narrow FM for FRS. You know, this is what you do. And you buy the radio, and it does that thing that it's programmed to do. With an amateur radio, you get a radio that will tune to any frequency. You know, a little bit here, a little bit there, up or down. It'll do AM and FM and upper sideband and lower sideband and CW and RIDI and, you know, any number of digital modes, which are basically just noise using sideband mode. You know, so it really, it's just a doorway to putting a signal on the air on a frequency. Now, you have to stay within certain bands. You have to ID and things like that. But it really doesn't, you know, there's like no channels. There's none, you know, except on 60 meters. There's no channels. So you can be anywhere on the band and you can do any mode you want at almost any power you want. And it gives you this real flexibility in terms of trying things out. So it really does open the door to people who like to experiment and test things. And, you know, If you're someone that, you know, wants to communicate, that's great for you. If you're somebody that likes to build stuff, there's great. There's a channel for you. If you're somebody that likes to operate digital modes on the computer, great. There's a channel for you. If you're somebody that likes emergency communications and integrating with police and fire, in a weather emergency, great. There's a channel. There's an activity for you. If there's somebody that likes to try and bounce things off the moon, there's a channel. You know, there's an activity for you. So ham radio is not any one particular thing.
Explain SlowScan TV.
SlowScan TV is basically a fax over the air. So you take a QSL card or a photo and you send it like one line at a time. And then the receiver gets this color image over the air with all the distortion that over the air brings.
Yep. So, and yet that's another mode of amateur radio that people are into. So that's a good.
Yeah, and there's people that like to rag chew. Like my dad never wanted to be in a contest. You know, if contest was on the air, he would turn off the radio. But right. He would check into various nets, which are regular discussions. He would rag chew. He would just have conversations. You know, he was in the Army. And if he, you know, if he met someone else that was also in the Army, you could guarantee they're going to talk for the next hour. You know, this like, two Army guys. Oh, were you here? Were you there? I was there here. I was there then. And it just, boom, you've got a topic of conversation that will carry you an indefinite length of time.
Yes.
So there's a lot to that.
Now, did your dad's station have the huge tower and the big 100 element beam on?
One thing we learned, he got his license in Alaska, and he initially got it because the cabin he was in, it was a dry bush cabin, 50 miles out of town, but he was situated in that if we put up an antenna just over his house and aimed it towards town, he could hit the repeater in town. And the ham radio operators in town, actually set it up with what they call a phone patch. Mm-hmm. So he could, with a little 5-watt radio connected to a what we call a beam, dial a phone and make a call from his cabin. Now, it's, you know, very basic. It's what we call simplex. So while he's talking, he's keying the radio, so he can't listen. So it's not like a normal phone where you can interrupt somebody. If he's talking, he's not listening. So you can't be, but no, he doesn't hear you. And then he lets go and says, over. And now he's just listening. He's not talking. So it's not as easy as a normal phone conversation. But if he needed to phone somebody and let them know, hey, I'm going to be coming into town on Thursday, he could do that. You know, or if he was way out there and it was the middle of winter and an emergency happened, he could actually phone in to town and get help, because he was able to make a phone call from way out there where there is no cell service. At the time, there was no internet service. So, you know, you were really kind of cut off if you didn't have that.
Well, back in the 70s, that was how the first mobile phones worked. They were Motorola. And there was a center, and you called in and they patched you through. But that's how you communicated. You still did the mic. You spoke, you couldn't hear, you said over, and then went the other direction.
Yeah. And, you know, you think back, I think it was the 50s and the 60s, the police radios with that big, long whip antenna. Yeah. That was 6 meters. That was 50 megahertz. You know, that's what they were using. And that would get you some decent range. And every now and then, band conditions would open up. One field day I had, I was on 6 meters and I was talking Florida to California. So it can be done at all, but you know, you're talking about using, you know, maximum power. What I've found is, it's all about the antenna.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about that thing, that interface between the two things. You've got your radio and RF and the air, you know, the thing that interfaces between those two is the thing. You know, you can push 1,000 watts into a crap antenna and you're still not going to get anywhere.
Right.
I got you. Well, that, I mean, this one was a big antenna because then they were in a basement and they just they would take the radio part and they would put it on a phone, or they would put a phone on a giz widget that would patch it through to that Motorola radio. And they even had a small, and I had one that was a flip phone, but this was 1972. And I could talk on it like a cell phone, except, you know, I had to button it each time.
Right. And remember the Nextel, that was a Motorola, you had Nextel. Remember, it was like a walkie-talkie.
Yeah.
Well, the Nextel technology was vastly different. You know, that was rolled into Sprint, but that was their walkie-talkie was an interesting situation in that it was completely digital, as you know, because their network was completely digital, but the walkie-talkie would check source to destination when you pushed the button. And if the recipient wasn't there, you would get a different beep. You would, you know, because you could, you know, put in everybody, or I just want to message Ralph. And if you key up and Ralph's not connected, it can't make that connection to Ralph. It actually comes back and lets you know, not there.
Right.
Cool. That's cool. Right. It's just an interesting, I've never heard much about this till.
Yeah, and people were always amazed. It's like, man, with this little handheld thing, I can go from Philadelphia to New York. I'm like, you're actually only going to the tower that's near you because it's cellular, and then it goes to an optical fiber line that goes from here to New York, and then it finds Ralph in New York on whatever tower he's on, and then it goes up to that tower and then out to Ralph. Basically, it's a cell phone call, but with that immediacy of a walkie-talkie. But you know, that's the reason it knew when, if Ralph was there or not. If Ralph turned his phone off or he was in a building and couldn't get a cell signal, then you would key up and it would be like, dee dee, you know, like, yes. I can't reach Ralph, you know, what's going on, you know? And that's why, because, you know, you're not just broadcasting, you know, when you have a walkie talkie, you're transmitting. There could be nobody near you, but you're just putting out RF to whomever might get it.
Yes.
Right. Well, that is good. If you could explain, maybe this is good because I love the way I love how you explain things so much better than I did. Let's talk about like DMR, D-Star, YSF, that type of thing.
The digital modes are something I have actually not delved into too much, but what they do, you know, there's two key aspects to digital modes that, as far as I know, again, I'm not an expert in the digital modes. Like normal handheld radios, you key them up and you talk to the repeater and it's brought, you know, you have 5 watts. If the repeater can hear you, the repeater's got a really big antenna high up in the air, and it takes your 5 watts and instantaneously retransmit it with like 100 watts from a really high place. So it's like, as long as you can hit the repeater, then it's like you're transmitting with 100 watts from a really high place and you can reach everybody. That's what a repeater does. So it covers a very large area. The Plano Amateur Radio Club, which we both belong to, has a repeater that does very good coverage over Collin County in Texas. And when there's a severe storm that comes through, it's activated by the National Weather Service for storm spotting. Why? Because anybody in the area who sees hail or cyclical activity in the clouds, they radio into the repeater and the National Weather Service listens to the repeater. So they say, oh, okay, in this area over near this overpass, you know, they're having, you know, half dollar sized hail, or, you know, if you want to use metrics, you know, like 5 centimeter hail. And then that person is radioing it into the repeater. The National Weather Service hears it on the repeater. The National Weather Service puts out a bulletin that says half dollar size hail has been seen in this location. And then your local TV station says, you know, oh, the National Weather Service is saying that half dollar size hail has been reported. I'm like, yeah, I heard that 5 minutes ago. Because I'm actually listening on the repeater that the National Weather Service is monitoring. Cool. Digital modes augment that. Just like digital TV, when you have an analog, it's like you've got a signal that, you know, you could have a great signal, you can have an okay signal, but then it starts to get a little choppy, a little scratchy, you're a little far from the repeater and, you know, you can't knock out everything that's said. With digital modes, it's just like if you're watching digital TV, it's 100% beautiful or it's crap. You know, you have that digital cliff and it sounds great. I heard everything you said perfectly clear, or you know, you get that. You know, it's perfect or it's nothing. But what that does is it means you're able to hear everything at a much lower quality, you know, further down in the quality spectrum. So you're still able to have 100% readability, much lower than you would if you were using regular FM radio. Plus, by digitizing it, packetizing it, now you're just dealing with data. And you can take a digital repeater and do different things with that data, because you can put data, who's transmitting, you know, what's the repeater, what is their GPS locations, because some of the radios have a little GPS receiver. So like if you're doing an emergency recon and stuff like that, and people are radioing in, oh, I found something, you know where they are on a map. And you know, you don't have to it saves the extra time. And well, where are you? Well, I'm at latitude this and no, I already got it. It's on the map right there. I see you.
GPRS, or that's not APRS that does the.
Well, APRS is just position data being transmitted over the APRS system. And you could do some messages, but it's mainly meant for track. but digital modes include that and other information as well. Then when you have a digital radio, you can then also, like with FM radios, like I said, my dad could punch in a couple of tones and then activate the phone, you know, connect the auto patch or the phone patch. With digital radios, you can then say, oh, well, you know what I want to do? I want to transmit, but I want to connect my node to Australia. And I can do that, you know, manually through my thing, because I have a friend who's in Australia and we want to have a conversation, and you can connect your local repeater to the Australia repeater, and then you can have a conversation. You're still only talking to your repeater, but then you're leveraging the internet and you're leveraging all of that out to his repeater through one of those digital modes.
Exactly. I have a Yaesu radios, but I also have a Yaesu handheld, and I can actually reach this on C4 FM, which is this kind of right digital mode.
Digital modes, yeah.
I can get in there, and once I'm in there, I can go to America Link is one of the big right breaker, you know, where everybody, even people from other countries, come onto America Link and they talk digitally. And then there's other rooms, obviously. There's thousands of these Yaesu System Fusion rooms. And I guess it's a proprietary thing, right? Because then other brands use D-Star and other, and I don't know anything about DMR and D-Star per se now. So then I got this Raspberry Pi-ish box, right? That will interface between DMR, D-Star, Y25? Anyway, there's these different types of digital modes. But anyway, I'm not smart enough to understand those per se. I did have an old DMR radio that had a cold plug, you know, and it had the code plug to get into a tower in Dallas, but then I don't know what happened to it. But anyway, so these digital modes are pretty interesting, because I think with a technician license, you can talk to people all over the world, right? But not necessarily, all you have to do is hit that repeater. So all I have to do is hit this repeater in Denton, Texas, in C4 FM, and then, you know, type in the right room number, and okay. And so then, and then the person who's talking, their call sign will stream a little liquid crystal screen, in this case on my FD70 or whatever, 70D, I think it is. So, little talk there. So you have any did you ever do any DMR or any other digital modes?
The one digital mode I do, let's see if it's, I have Echo Link on my phone, and wow, that is kind of the same thing. Echo Link is, you know, people around the world can link their repeaters to Echo Link, and then you just run the Echo Link app on your phone or your computer. You don't even need a radio. I mean, most everybody already has a phone, and then you could use this to talk on those repeaters. You know, you still ID, you still tell people where you're at and everything. But, you know, when it says repeaters, let's go back. Nope. Go back to stations, locations. You know, you can see where it says, I can be in Asia, Africa, Europe, North America, Oceania, South America. In Europe, wow, there are 1,577 nodes currently connected. And that way, you know, you don't need to have a large investment to talk around the world. The difference, though, between the digital modes that can do that, it makes it easy for technicians. And these days, without a code requirement, there's really not anything stopping people from getting a general license. What I like to say is when you operate HF, it's like going fishing. With the digital modes, it's like doing a text message. I know where I want it to go, and I tell it to go there, and then I'm telling it what to do, and I'm doing this directly. With HF, or high frequency, or you know, sideband or whatever, or even like your CB radio, you know, when you're trying to, like, you're just throwing a line out there, you don't know what you're going to get. You could get this really big fish, or you could get nothing. You know, it's really up to what propagation is doing, how, you know, the sunspots and other technical things like that. So you're kind of at the whim of how worldwide radio is working at that particular time. And there's things you can do to assist it, like, oh, if it's daytime, I'll be on 20 meters because that is works better during the day than 40 or 80. It's at nighttime. Well, I'll go on 80 meters because that works better than 10 or 20 at night. So, you know, you start to build knowledge as to how, what works best and what modes and what antennas and things like that. And it's all knowledge building and experience. You know, again, it's like fishing. It's like, okay, it's this time of day. This type of lure works better in this type of creek for that type of fish. And I'm going to catch something.
That's really interesting. I've already learned more about this than I ever dreamed of. I mean, I'm clear back in the breaker one, man. This is
that's where it all began, man. For me anyway. And also I have a GMRS license. Like Anthony said earlier, you have the family radio service, which have the first seven or so channels, the FRS with these little walkie talkies that you could buy, and the wattage is just a little bit. Then the next layer of channels in the GMRS as it goes up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and it goes about like 23, I think, but that you can increase the wattage. And then the last channels, you can have repeaters, just like we've been talking about. You can have repeaters on GMRS, and the radios max out at 50 watts. And so this is an interesting thing. That's at 462 megahertz, whereas CB is at 27 megahertz. So this is a smaller antenna. It's a tighter window. Just like Anthony was saying, they're line of sight antennas. There's repeaters. And the thing I like about GMRS is that you pay the FCC $35 and your whole damn family can talk under your license. So you have Joe, Bob, the whole Waltons can talk on my license. And it's kind of fun because a lot of off-roaders, the off-roader people, the Jeep people, Anthony, you're sounding kind of like a prepper there in 99, but yeah, a lot of the preppers, they're into the GMRS space and it's kind of this fun emerging radio to see if it's going to be, you know, is channel 19 going to be the new channel 19 for truckers or is it just going to, you know, it's really exciting to see who's buying these radios and what's going on with it. You have any GMRS experience yet, Anthony? I have
some FRS experience. You know, we found them, you know, fun. The FRS is the free family version of it. And, you know, they're limited, I think, 2 watts max, usually a half a watt. Right. And you can't detach the antenna from the radio. GMRS, you can, you know, detach the antenna, put a better antenna on, a bigger antenna, or have an antenna on top of the car, even with a little handheld. So, you know, it gives you more power, more flexibility and everything, but that's, you know, where the license comes in. But yeah, they both work really well in terms of local area communications, because again, they're FM, so you don't have the noise of AM or sideband. You know, when it's clear, it's super clear and comes in. And line of sight, they work really, really good. And then, you know, it's easy for kids to pick up. So if you get an FRS radio or a GMRS, and now that they share the same first seven channels, you go to channel one, you hear all kinds of kids in the neighborhood all talking, playing, pushing the little ringer button over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And, you know, but, you know, that's what it's for. It's like, you know, hey, it's free. Have fun, talk, just like those, just like the 49 megahertz, you know, radios back from Radio Shack, you know. Those were like, buy these things and you two can talk to each other, you know, around the yard and have fun.
You know, Wayne talked about police earlier with the big old 102-inch steel whip with the spring and the ball. But, you know, I've noticed on some of the GMRS, there's these Unity Gain antennas that look like plastic cones. That look like the plastic cones that are drilled into cop cars from the 90s and 2000s. So it looks as though, right, police might have been using some of that area.
The frequencies are very similar to, you know, the MERS system, and the business bands are right kind of in the same area. So they're all kind of, you know, it's just a little disc cone type of antenna. You can't tell what the trace looks like inside. You know, it could be set for 600 megahertz, 500, 400, 300, whatever. We don't know. They're all kind of going to kind of look the same. They're just meant to be very durable, very robust, you know, able to, you know, be reliable.
If a person's listening, wants to begin, what's the first step?
It depends on what they want to do. Like, you know, like Bruce says, if you're a Jeeper, you know, mountain climber with your Jeep Wrangler and stuff like that, you know, you could be on CB with a loaded whip on the back of the truck, or you could, you know, get a GMRS, you know, mobile radio that'll do 30 watts. I mean, that's an insane amount of power. You know, that's going to carry you most every place. The thing, you know, with that type of environment, though, is it's very mountainous. So the 400 megahertz spectrum is not going to go over several hills. It's going to be blocked by those hills. Whereas the CB, the AM radio CB, may be able to bounce around a little bit and get you a little further. If you were interested in ham radio.
Like I want to talk to somebody in Australia, and I also want to talk to somebody in England, and then somebody in Africa.
Yeah, there's,
Digitally, or do you want to do that the hard way?
Well, I want to do it easy because I know nothing about it.
Right. Well, you know, it's like fishing. It's not as easy as you think. You know, it's sort of like you can say, oh, well, I'm just going to get a line and throw it into the river. Then you're like, well, I really need to be on the other side, so I need a boat. And then, oh, okay, well, I need different types of lure, you know, and it starts to add up, you know. When, you know, so if you want to do better, it's going to take more knowledge, expertise, and stuff to get you to do what you want to do. You know, I will say, you know, there is also being in the right place at the right time. You know, I went camping once and I had a little 5-watt radio on 20 meters, and I had a little wire antenna I threw up into a tree at the campground, and I was just tuning around on the dial and I heard this really strong tone. And that, you know, once you get the experience, you say, oh, somebody else is tuning up. Maybe they haven't transmitted yet. So I just sat there and waited, and I heard this loud signal come in, and they started talking CQ, which is basically, is there anybody out there? They're throwing their line in the water. So I came back to them thinking that maybe my 5 watts will do good, because I don't know. Are they loud because they're doing 1,000 watts? Are they loud because they have a directional antenna? Are they loud because the signal is just really good between me and them, or they're close? So at the time I was in Pennsylvania, and turns out that station was in Bosnia. And I was like, wow, you've got a really good signal. And in Pennsylvania, there is a town called Moscow, Moscow, Pennsylvania. And just to be sure that his loud signal wasn't because he was close, I asked him, are you in Bosnia, Europe? And of course, you know, he's like, stupid American. Of course I'm in Bosnia, Europe. What other Bosnia is there and everything? So we had a nice conversation for a little bit. And when we got done, you could hear like 50 people call after this guy. I was lucky I was first because my 5 watts was not going to be anywhere near as loud as their signal if they had 1,000 watts or 500 watts or whatever. But, you know, right place, right time, great conditions made it work. Whereas sometimes the conditions aren't right. Sometimes you get there and there's already 500 people calling and you're not going to be heard. Like Bruce says, you know, it's like you got to do something else to be able to get your signal through.
Well, I mean, but okay, then legally, how do I start? Like you're talking about license and level one, level whatever, whatever.
Yeah, legally, you can study for your license online and under, you know, it's basically building understanding of how radios work, how the signals get around the world, how electricity works, how to power your radio, what the rules are, where you can transmit, where you can't, and things like that. So that's where the rules are based. It's like a, you know, studying for your driver's test. These are the rules of the road of the airwaves.
Where do you go to do this?
You can study online. There's any number of online courses. There are books you can get. There are YouTube videos that will help teach you. The American Radio Relay League is an organization that helps to support the amateurs in the United States. They have training materials that you can buy and download. There's apps you can get for your phone that will like go through the questions and help you understand what each one is asking. So, you know, you could just, you know, search for ham radio test in whatever mode that you want to do it, whether it be a Mac app, a Windows app, a website, a YouTube video, a phone app, whatever floats your boat, you could start, you know, building that knowledge. Then I would say you could find a local club, you know, by using Google Maps and search for ham radio club. You could find a local club and ask when they have testing, and they will perform the test for the American Radio Relay League and the FCC that will get you a legitimate license. And then once you have the license, you know, like Bruce says, then you could be like, okay, I would actually say take a different tact, which is what I did when I joined. I was part of a club. I joined the club. I had no radio. The club, you know, I basically, you know, everybody can stand up and do different things. And I would say, hey, listen, I just got my license. I don't have a radio. Does anybody have a radio I can borrow? And somebody else says, oh, I got a radio. You know, we can loan it to you and everything. You know, it's building those relationships, with other people and everything, that there's always extra gear laying around. You know, our club has 2 radios that we bring to field day so that people who don't have radios can get on the air. You know, there's going to be events that you can get on the air and try your hand. And my first radio was that 706. And I still remember advice that the ham gave me. He says, you know, here, I have this 706. It's an ICOM specific model. You know, use this and try it out. And using this will help you learn what you like to do, what you don't like to do, and what does this radio do that you like and don't like, so that when you go to get your own radio, you know what you're looking for. Because there's so much technology out there, including the used technology. You don't have to buy anything new. And I don't think I've ever bought a new radio. Come to think of it, everything I always buy is always secondhand because it's just so much cheaper. And, you know, it's like my first handheld radio I bought from another club member. And the cool thing was he already had it programmed with all the local repeaters. Oh, that makes it easy. I don't have to do it.
That's interesting.
You know, yeah. and then a simple wire in the air gets you on the air. You don't need, you know, complex antennas. They help you do better. But a simple wire is what I talked to Bosnia with 5 watts, you know, so it can be done. It gets you on the air. And then doing that says, okay, I can do this. I can work these bands. But now that I've been doing that, I want to build off of that. And I want to do this other band. Well, I can add a second antenna for that band. You know, now I have two antennas to switch between. Or I can get a multi-band antenna that will do multiple bands pretty well. You know, so starting with 20 meters daytime, which makes it easy, a simple dipole. I mean, my portable kit that I take on trips with me fits in a little bag that's about this big. Like it's a little kid's lunch bag. It includes the radio, a 20 meter wire antenna, some wire to get it outside of the house and up into a tree, and
a tuner, a
microphone, and the batteries built in and everything. So that's basically my whole kit is in a little travel bag, and I can use that when I go on a trip. So if, you know, if we got a couple hours one evening, I can hop on the radio and say CQ.
That's cool. That is cool.
Yeah, I got my technician by doing a Gordon West book, and I studied the Gordon West book, and then I then got my general. There was a radio club in Saginaw, Texas, northwest of Fort Worth, and they had classes for 3 weekends in a row at the fire department. And it was 6 classes, and at the end of the 6th class, you could take your test. And I did it that way because I really enjoy a class environment. Now that I'm looking for the extra license, it doesn't seem like there's very many classes for that. And I went to ham radio prep, and there's a ton of, but I bought for $50. I bought this ham radio prep course. I can log on anytime. It marches you through a bazillion different videos and tests, and it has a methodology that seems fairly good. You have to put in the time. You know what I mean? So that's what I'll tell anybody, is that you still have to put in time to study, to get. Not that it's horribly difficult, but it's just more you have to put in. My experience is you just have to put in the time and learn and listen, and you'll get there. Yeah.
Yeah, for those that might not know, there's different classes of license, and
yeah.
A technician license gets you. It's very simple, and it lets you get on the air on VHF frequencies, a little bit on 10 meters, which is like the CB band. So sometimes that can go around the world or long distances. Many times not. It'll get you 10 meters, 6 meters, 2 meters, and those higher frequencies, like everything that'll work on a handheld radio. A general license takes that 10 meters, and then you can go down 15, 20, 30, you know, 40, 60, 80, 160 meters, which 160 meters times 3 is 300 feet. That's the length of the wave that you're trying to transmit with, is 300 feet. Anything lower, you're going to be talking to the submarines underwater. So it opens up this whole world of activity with your general license. So, you know, when I did it, I just wanted to get the general license. I didn't care about the technician license. That didn't interest me at all. And oddly enough, now when we do field day, I just do VHF, which is the technician's license. But no, at home, you know, when my portable kit is just the HF frequencies. So we say the HF is the high frequencies. So let's just say AM radio is 900 kilohertz. So it's way down the band. And then everything between the AM band and the FM band on your radio is kind of where HF lives, you know, because the FM band starts at 190 megahertz. So 50 megahertz is 6 meters. That's right where channel 6 used to be. And then your CB bands are right around 10 megahertz. And then down below that, the antennas get larger, which is why a wire antenna for 20 is really easy to do, because you just have a thin little piece of wire going in two directions. It's easy to put up. But a general license gets you those lower frequencies with still some sections carved out, you know, for extra and, you know, advanced and extra licensees to get those extra bands. But for me, I'm happy to not operate on those other little pieces of bands, and I don't have to take the extra test.
I got you.
Yeah.
Yep. Anthony, what is the most interesting call you've had or that just blew you away?
Well, that Bosnia one is the best story because it's like normally, you know, my home station is 100 watts. You know, most radios, that's what they call barefoot. 100 watts comes out of the radio. Your license gives you up to 1,500 watts of legal power on all the HF bands. That's a lot of power. Plus, if you have a directional antenna, you're sending, you know, all that power in a certain direction. You know, you're just like blowing the doors off of things, you know. Then there's a whole subset of things, people who you don't need to use 100 watts. So if you're using one of the digital modes like PSK or something like that, you can dial it back to 30 watts or 20 watts and it'll still get through. If you're doing Morse code, and there's still a lot of people that do code, you're taking all of that power that you have, the 100 watts, and you're carving it into this tiny little slice. So it's super powerful, and you could be down at 10 watts, 5 watts. And once you get to 5 watts, that's what they call QRP, or very low power. And you get people that go out there and, you know, in, you know, national parks and things like that, and they throw up a little antenna, and they and they can talk around the world. 5 watts, no problem. But when I did that 5 watt thing, I don't do code. I was using voice, which is far less efficient. But I was still 5 watts. I was QRP because I had a little QRP camp, you know, radio for camping. And I was amazed that the guy in Bosnia heard me. And I was amazed that the signal from him was as strong as it was. And, you know, that's landing the big fish with a tiny little reel and 5-pound test.
Well, how about if either of you experienced, like, with chaos that goes on at certain times in the world, different places, some catastrophic event or war or storms or something like that? And I've always read that ham operators, you know, get active.
Yes. Well, when the hurricane blew through and tore up Puerto Rico, there were areas that had no cell service because the cell towers, batteries ran out. There was no power coming in, and there was not going to be any power coming in for a year. Mm-hmm. Or things were underwater. Roads were all ripped up. And how does a town way out in the middle of nowhere let somebody else know they need help? They need, you know, we have 3 people that have broken limbs. We need, you know, this amount of food for this many people. Well, somebody had a radio and their tower blew over, but they could throw up an antenna in a tree. They could get on the air. And even if they're not going to reach somebody locally, they reach somebody in Oklahoma. Well, that person in Oklahoma has a phone that works. And that person in Oklahoma is able to call FEMA and say, we have this. I received this call from this town in Puerto Rico. This is the emergency. And they're passed the data forward.
That's so cool. Okay.
That's really where it is. You don't, when you make that call from a remote area, you don't know where it's going to be received, but you know you're very likely going to be received somewhere that's not in an emergency situation.
Cool.
Yep.
Very good.
That's a good one. And
I can't thank you enough. This is just, I love it.
We'll have to do a little 2.0 and talk about some other stuff as well. I mean, minutes goes by fast. So, Anthony, how can our viewers and listeners reach you if they have any questions about amateur radio or video editing? How can you be reached?
Well, for amateur radio, I am part of the Plano Amateur Radio Club, and the website for the Plano Club is k5prkpaparadiokilo.net. And you can go there, and I am the vice president, so you can email me. vp@k5prk.net. My video production, you can find all of that at stream4us. Stream for us. So if you're looking for someone to stream for us,
I got
you. Help you do that.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's a pleasure. And you explain things real well. and hopefully, you know, generate some interest into the hobby. So, well, folks, that's a great show today. And Wayne, how can folks reach you real quick?
Wayne_515@yahoo.com.
All right. Excellent. So folks, don't forget to come by our own social media channels. Our Facebook is up to date at the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook, Concierge_coaches on Instagram. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. So with that, we'll say goodbye to everybody. And we'll see you here next time on LA on the Concierge Coaches Show. Bye, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.